The following is a class given by His Holiness Jayapataka Swami Maharaj on August 28, 1980 in Los Angeles, California. The class begins with a reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 21, Text 5.
Translation by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. When the king entered the palace, conch shells and kettle drums were sounded. Priests chanted Vedic mantras, and professional reciters offered different prayers. But in spite of all this ceremony to welcome him, the king was not the least bit affected. The reception given to the king was full of opulence, yet he did not become proud. It is said, therefore, that great personalities of power and opulence never become proud. And the example is given that a tree which is full of fruit and flowers does not stand erect in pride, but instead bends downwards to show submissiveness. This is a sign of the wonderful character of great personalities. Thus end the purport of verse number 5, chapter 21, canto 4 of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Here Srila Prabhupada describes how a great personality of power and opulence, by his being, great personality means that he's a devotee. Because without being a devotee of Vishnu, how can someone be a truly great personality? So even such great personality is offered all kinds of respect or all kinds of reception, that he will not become proud. The example Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada gave, is this: like a tree filled with so many fruits and flowers does not stand erect in pride but hangs down. In the Vedic time, great personalities would be offered different kinds of prayers, respect, greetings, and taking it as a personal exaggeration, rather, whatever, as a manifestation of the mercy that they have received through their spiritual master and through the mercy of Lord Sri Krishna, the great personalities would not become proud, but would be reminded of their dependence upon superior authorities. They would become rather humbled in the face of such respects. Of course, here we see that Maharaj Prithu, he is meeting with his citizens. And actually, Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes on this planet were just like that. Factually, if we analyze, we could say that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he came down simply to meet with his different devotees. Sometimes his devotees would come to meet him, just like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in Navadvip and Nityananda came to meet him. And like he personally went from Nilachola, Jagannath Puri, to South India, and he stayed in the Ranganath village with Venkata Bhatta, Vimala Bhatta, and Prabodhananda Saraswati, the three brothers. And there he was being personally served, hand and foot, lotus foot, by Gopal Bhatta, the son of Venkata Bhatta. Of course, later that Gopal Bhatta was sent to Vrindavan to become the associate of Rupa Sanatan, Gopal Bhatta Goswami. So Lord Chaitanya had gone all the way from Nilachal Jagannath Puri to meet his devotee. Just like one time Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went from Jagannath Puri heading for Vrindavana, and he went on the Bengal route. So as he was going through Bengal, he passed through the district of Murshidabad, the seat of the Emperor of Bengal. You see, there was one family in Karnataka, South India, who were great kings. And we can trace that family, that gradually, after a few generations, they left their kingly occupation and became Brahmana. And gradually they migrated. And finally, after five generations, the person ended up in Naihati, in Bengal. And his son moved to Jessore district. A very strict Brahmin. If he even saw a meat eater, he would fast the whole day. He was so strict. And he had two sons by the name of Rupa and Sanatan. Actually three sons. And Anupam. That was Balab. But these sons, two of them accepted service from the king, Hussein Shah, the emperor of Bengal, as his chief ministers. And practically they ruled the whole government. Although they felt themselves very humbled, they felt themselves very unqualified because they had accepted service from a Javana, from a cow eater, from a Mlecha. But actually in their daily life, their lifestyle was so wonderful. They built a second Vrindavan at their residence, Sri Ramakeli. In Ramakeli, they dug two kundas, Radha Kunda, Shyama Kunda. They dug an additional eight other kundas, one for each of the gopis. And this way they planted so many gardens and trees, and they made it just a Vrindavan atmosphere. And there Sanatan Goswami was worshipping Sri Sri Radha Madana Mohana with his brother Sri Rupa, his younger brother. And although they had accepted service from this Mahabharatan emperor, and they were actually ruling his whole kingdom, they were just like oceans of mercy. They were like showers of rain clouds that were just giving so much charity. All the time there was practically like a stream, just like we see ants coming to that when they leave out a few sandesh. The people, just one after another, all the great devotees, all the pandits, all the acharya, everyone is coming to Rupa and Sanatan at Ramakeli, because they're always constantly were hearing the Bhagavatam, the conclusions of different Vaishnava Siddhanta, and they're giving out profuse charity to any qualified pandit. They're giving out profuse. Factually, The whole Navadvip up to that time, and that's after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to Jagannath Puri back, they're all being maintained simply by the charity of Rupa and Sanatana. They were maintaining the whole Vedic culture. But they themselves are thinking, we are so unqualified, our father and forefathers were so great devotees, strict brahmanas, we're working for Amlacha. And this way they always thought to themselves, hino dino, very insignificant, very fallen. So when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to Ramakili, he came that side, he wanted to just to meet Rupa and Sanatana, to meet with his devotees. He came simply to meet with his devotees. So at that time, when he was nearby, Rupa San heard that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has come. Immediately, they went to meet him. But how did they go? They took some grass, put the grass in their mouths, and from a great distance they paid their full sastanga pranam. Sastanga means 7 points. You see the whole body, two arms, head, chest, and the two legs is 6 points. They all touch. They all touch the ground at one time, like a stick they fell down. And they offered so many prayers, Lord Chaitanya. He was embarrassed to hear them saying so many humble things. We are so fallen. We are mlecha. We are the most insignificant people. They go on with their humility. Lord Chaitanya, he was actually embarrassed to hear their humility, because actually they were such great devotees. They always, day and night, were hearing Krishna katha. Just because that once in a while they would just go and take some order from the emperor. They're thinking, we are all in this way associating and getting the... But actually in their daily lifestyle, no one could be more Krishna conscious. So Lord Chaitanya, he embraced them. And he said, your humility is hurting me too much. I cannot bear it. You see. So of course, we know that Rupa and Sanatana, their mission was to be sent to Vrindavan. And later they left their kingdom very shortly, joined Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And on his order, they went to Vrindavana to write scripture and to excavate the lupta tirthas, the hidden tirthas of Lord Krishna's pastime and birthplace. So Narottam Thakur, he sings a song, one prayer, where he says, oh Lord Chaitanya, you are so merciful on the fallen souls, and you are possessing so many transcendental energies, shakti. And these transcendental energies, you have given them different orders, different potencies to perform different tasks. Just like you have sent Rupa and Sanatana to Vrindavan to write transcendental literatures. This is your one type of energy who you empower to write bhakti shastra. And there's another type of energy whom you have empowered to distribute those books, like Srinivas Acharya, to preach widely the message of those transcendental literatures on devotional service. Today we heard about Lord Srinityananda Prabhu, how he was preaching on the order of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu throughout Bengal. He took the order of his spiritual master and he was simply preaching. Similarly, Srinivas Acharya, you see, he was especially empowered by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to distribute his literatures, and to make so many devotees. Sometimes people simply focus on one aspect. Actually, Rupa and Sanatana were the greatest preachers, and their preaching was by writing. Of course, they also stayed in Vrindavan. So different people like to focus on the fact they stayed in one place. They say, this is superior, what is the preaching? But Narottam Thakur said that both kinds of energies are equally empowered by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for different tasks. Srinivas took all the literatures of the Goswamis, the Chaitanya Charitamrita, from Vrindavan to the Bengal devotees. They were not able to get these transcendental literatures. They were deeply anxious for them. They knew that Krishnadas, Kaviraj, Jiva Goswami, Rupa Sanatan, they were writing. But they could not, up to the time that Srinivas Acharya had brought them, they could not get those books. So of course in those days they did not have multi-litho offset. They had handwritten on palm leaves. So his book distribution was of course simply to the greatest devotees. But he would preach and give lecture from those books and huge sankirtan to countless thousands of people. It's Srinivas Acharya. Actually, it's very good to focus for a bit on the qualities of these great devotees who were actually active preachers, who took the risk on behalf of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to simply go out and preach. This was no less pleasing, rather this was most pleasing to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This was the purpose of his mission. So both kind of devotees need to write and to distribute. Actually, Srinivas Acharya was simply sent to spread this movement. His father was a simple Brahmin living in the Gram, the village of Chakundi, about 5 or 6 kroshes, or about 12 miles from Katwa Dam, where Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted sannyas. He was known as Gangadas Bhattacharya. And he decided one day, I'm going to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Navadvip. On his way, he stopped at Katwa to see the great sannyasi Kesha Bharati, who he often would visit, and then take blessings to go to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Navadvip. When he came there, then he saw there was a big crowd, and he went and bowed down to Kesha Bharati, and he said that I am going to go to Navadvip to see Gauranga Mahaprabhu. He said, don't know. Gauranga Mahaprabhu has come here to take sannyas. He thought, this is just like getting the moon in one's hand. I am going to see the moon, but the moon has come here. And then he was directed, and there he went, and there he saw the beautiful lotus eye, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. His lotus eyes would extend back to his ears. His chest was so broad, his waist was so thin, it would make a lion ashamed. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was there chanting soma ecstatically kirtan, and there were literally thousands of people watching. And he was spinning around and around, and everyone was just crying and absorbed in transcendental ecstasy. Then at that time, Lord Chaitanya sat down and he said, bring the barber. And everyone started to cry. They couldn't think. The barber came, paid his obeisances, and he was hesitating how he can put his hand on that beautiful lotus hair of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But Lord Chaitanya indicated, don't, just do your job. So then he put his hand on Lord Chaitanya's head and he started to cut. And the people, they went crazy. Oh, no, not Lord Chaitanya's beautiful hair. No, not. They just couldn't bear it. They were falling down, beating themselves. No, they just couldn't. Why Chaitanya cutting his hair, accepting sannyasa? It was too heartbreaking. It was the women were crying. The men were, they couldn't look. It was just so painful. And then, you see, after he finished his business, went, took a quick bath in the Ganges, came back, he sat down in his saffron clothes, so beautiful. But the people, they were just shaken that the beautiful Nimai Pandit, that now he has given, taken this austere, they couldn't bear to see him take any austerity, taken this austere path with shaven head. And he sat down, and Keshav Bharati said, how can I give you sannyas? You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Who am I? I am just an insignificant jiva, fallen soul. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told him that you must perform this. But he wanted just to check, and by kind of a trick, he said, Keshav Bharati, do you know the Vaishnav, you know the sannyas mantra? Pulled him over and said it in his ear. And this way he initiated Keshav Bharati first. Then Keshav Bharati gave the same mantra back to Lord Chaitanya. Just like we take the Ganges water in our palm and we go Om Namo to the Ganga Devi and then again offer it. Like that, the mantra received from Lord Chaitanya given back. So actually Keshav Bharati is the disciple of Lord Chaitanya. Then when he gave that your name is Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Ganga Das Bharachai would just sing, he heard the name Sri Krishna Chaitanya and he just went into complete ecstatic trance. And actually he was just walking around, walking into trees and just Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Sri Krishna Chaitanya. He just became completely absorbed in that name. And he couldn't stop chanting, Sri Krishna Chaitanya. He got back to his village. And he said, what happened to good old Ganga Das? He's no longer Ganga Das, he's Chaitanya Das. And from that time, he became known as Chaitanya Das. You see. So to make a long story short, shorter. Chaitanya Das, he had a very pious wife. But they had no issue. And they were living very simply, always worshipping the Lord. And actually, they were almost like vanaprastis. They had no desire for even for children. They had no desire but to worship Chaitanya, to worship the Lord. For a long time, and people used to criticize them, what is the use of this so-called Brahman? He's got no wealth, he's got no children. What is the use? The materialists, you know, they always like to measure people by their aristocratic families and their material opulence. Suddenly though, his wife got an intense desire that she wanted to have a son. Although she was completely desireless practically. And so the husband was a little bit confused that after all this time, suddenly you want a son. So it's not, you know, what you think. It's actually that I have an intense desire in my heart, something that I feel we must have some son. I don't understand why this desire is coming. And so then they do decide, let's go down and see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Jagannath Puri. Because by that time he was in Jagannath Puri. And they heard so many stories of his Rath Yatra and everything. So they headed on down. And they were going, chanting kirtan the whole way. And people were seeing them very beautifully. Finally they reached Jagannath Puri. And just as they reached, they came in. There they saw Lord Chaitanya. Again the same lotus-eyed, broad-chested, arms that go down to his knees, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, surrounded with Sarup Damodar, Govinda, Ramananda Rai, Kashi Mishra, Baninath Rai, all the devotees of Nilachal. And at that time, Lord Chaitanya immediately saw two humble grihasthas from Bengal standing, easy to miss. He spotted them immediately and said, oh hey, Come along, have you seen the lotus-eyed Jagannath? Come and see the lotus-eyed Jagannath. When he said that, they're overwhelmed. They just fell down to the ground and started offering prayers. And he told his associates, bring them along with us. And they all started talking, who are these people? You know, immediately they said, this is a great mystery. Immediately Lord Chaitanya brings these two grihasthas with all the sannyasis and all the devotees' associates. So they're all thinking that pretty soon Lord Chaitanya will reveal what is the actual mystery about these two devotees. So Lord Chaitanya, he went and had darshan of Jagannath. And then after a time he returned to his quarters. And he told Govinda Das that these two, Chaitanya Das and his wife was Lakshmi Priya, to them will be born a son, Srinivas Acharya. And he will be great preacher of my Ham Sankirtan movement. And so in this way Lord Chaitanya revealed. That night Chaitanya Das went to sleep, and in a dream Jagannath Subhadra Balaram came and told him that go back to Bengal, to your village. You will have a son who will be a great devotee of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by the name of Srinivas. And he woke up astonished. The next day Chaitanya Mahaprabhu called him and gave the same order. You go immediately to Bengal. There you have a child. He will be born a son who will be a great devotee. And you continuously perform Samkirtan. This is my order to you. You perform Samkirtan. You always chant and you purify your fellow villagers with this Harinam. So then Lord Chaitanya's order being received, immediately he and his wife went off and returned, and the whole way they were chanting Sankirtan. And in their village daily they would chant. And the materialists, they continued their criticism. But when she became pregnant, laden with child, then she started to get some special attraction to her. And people, they automatically became very favorable, offering so many gifts and everything. So anyway, to make a very long story short, the child was born. There's so many pastimes, childhood pastimes, how the mother would take the child on her lap and say, hey Bapu, they used to call the children then father or pop. Bapu means pop or dad, you know, but they could say, hey pop, let me hear you chant the name Sochinandan. Let me hear you chant the name Nityananda Pran, the life of Nityananda. Let me hear you chant, you see, the Lord of Advaita. Let me hear you chant the very life and soul of Godadhar. Let me hear you chant the name of the master of Srivas. And this they chant Gopinath Murari Krishna Govinda. And this way then the child, and just a small baby, would chant the names of broken little. Some were out properly, some halfway. And this way the parents would get so much happiness to see their son advancing in Krishna consciousness. See. As Srinivas grew up, then his father Chaitanya Das, he would show special affection to him. How was that? Sometimes he would have Srinivas sit by him and he would tell him pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He told him how he met Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He told him that whole pastime. And when Srinivas heard how Lord Chaitanya was taking sannyas, and Chaitanya Das was telling, and again he remembered the whole thing, and he started to cry. And he became so absorbed when he described how Lord Chaitanya's hair was cut. He just fell over unconscious. And Srinivas grabbed his feet and he was crying. And he fell unconscious. And the mother walked in and saw the father and the son. They're lying unconscious crying in separation of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This was the relationship between father and son of Srinivas Acharya and his father. Srinivas. Then he would come, and then again they would start discussing. He described He described how he went and saw Rupa and Sanatan one time when he was a student. He went with his guru and they were the chief ministers. He described all the things that I described before. In this way, there's so many wonderful pastimes. Srinivasacharya, he went. Finally, his father disappeared and he moved nearby. He got some special mercy from Narahari Sarkar, other great devotees of Srikando. And he decided, he was told by them, you must immediately go to Jagannath Puri. Lord Chaitanya's pastimes are going to finish. Don't waste any time. So immediately set off, and he was just filled with transcendental ecstasy. He set off to meet Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And this is, of course, this story can be told in different degrees of depth. Time is running short. But basically what happened, you see, on the way, he heard that Gadadhar Pandit had disappeared. Or rather, that Lord Chaitanya had disappeared. And when he heard that, he was just smashing his head on the ground. He was pulling his hair out. He was thinking, my life is useless. Again, falling unconscious, Lord Chaitanya appeared and embraced him and said, "You." There he went to Jagannath Puri. And there he met Gadadhar Pandit. And Gadadhar Pandit said that, you can't imagine Gadadhar Pandit. I'm just shortening the whole thing. But he was, after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left, I mean, he was in such separation. He was so, no one could see him. No one could speak to him. He was so intensely in separation of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Factually, when he came, he said, we could see you simply keeping his life to see Srinivas. After he saw him, he sent him and he went to all the different devotees. He went to Ramananda Rai. He saw him for some time, embraced him. He went down, he paid his obeisance, touched his feet. And then each one, they saw Srinivasacharya, knowing that this was the person who Lord Chaitanya was empowering to preach, one of the great devotees who would be preaching, who would be doing Sankirtan. In this way, they went to so many devotees. Of course, it's a very great story. He went then to take instruction for Gadadhar Pandit, but he showed him his Bhagavatam. He said, what can I do? The whole Bhagavatam was washed out because when they were reading it, the tears of their eyes would wash it out. There was nothing left. He said, he looked at it. He said, I can't study this Bhagavatam. There's no more letters. So he was sent back to Navadvip to get a Bhagavatam written. You see, I was bringing this story in different classes up to now, so I'm just kind of skimming over it to get up to the time when he returned back to Navadvip. So when he finally, you see, he got back to Navadvip to get a new Bhagavatam written. You see, at that time, it was already pre-informed that he was coming to Chaitanya's followers in a wonderful way. As he came near to Navadvip, again he met Narahari Sarkar and he told him, you should go quickly to Navadvip and then to Vrindavan. Actually, first you should go to Navadvip. I'm cutting out a little bit. Actually, this is the second time he came back. He went to Navadvip for one day and immediately he came back to Jagannath Puri. When he came back, Gadadhar Pandit disappeared. He was again going to commit suicide. He was finished. But then Gadadhar Pandit told him to go back to Bengal. He went back to Bengal. Then on the way back, he was thinking only of meeting Nityananda and Advaita. They heard they disappeared. He was in deep separation. They came in a dream, embraced him, said, you go meet the devotees of Vrindavan, of Navadvip, then you go to Vrindavan. So then when he went to Navadvip, very eager, at that time, he met this devotee, Bansi Badan, who was a disciple of Vishnu Priya, the consort of Lord Chaitanya. And immediately he saw him. And he said, this must be Srinivas. I mean, everyone had heard about him. Although he was just a young boy, he was, you know, a young man. But he was so wonderful features, very pure features. And he was always chanting Hare Krishna. He was always absorbed in thinking of Lord Chaitanya. And he was very humble. And so, as soon as he saw him, he went and informed Vishnupriya, who was in a deplorable condition. And when she heard that it was Srinivas, said, immediately bring him in. And Srinivas came in, paid his obeisances, started offering prayers, and she put her lotus feet on his head, and she started to instruct him that last night, Lord Chaitanya, he came to me, and he sat down by my side. He brought me over and sat me down by him, and he said, my dear, you see, Vishnupriya, there's one devotee, Srinivas, you cannot imagine how much grief he is suffering. Because you can, at this time, he went down to see Chaitanya disappeared. He saw Gadara Pandit, went, came back to get the bow, went back, Gadara Pandit disappeared. He came back to see Nitai and Go and Advaita, they disappeared. He said, you cannot imagine how much grief he is feeling. Please, you give him special mercy. And saying this, he disappeared. So Vishnupriya could understand this was a very special devotee for Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And she, for every day he came there for a few days. And at that time, the different devotees he also met is simply meeting devotees. This is the most wonderful pastime. Vaishnavas, they meet together, they discuss the spiritual master and Lord Chaitanya, they meet together, then they go out and continue their preaching. But this meeting is a very ecstatic, wonderful experience. You see, because it's simply, at that time, one simply glorifying the great qualities of Vaishnavas, glorifying the qualities of the previous Acharyas, glorifying the qualities of the Lord, and explaining different ways how to expand the preaching. And then, of course, they have to separate and continue their services. So then they see Srivas came, and he gave his mercy. He met Murari Gupta, he met Chandrasekhar, he met Govinda Ghosh, he met all the devotees. And they told him, finally, you go. You must go to Vrindavana. You must go to Vrindavan. So, then Srinivas Acharya, you see, that he's far junior than Srivas, the Narada Muni of the Panchatatta. He was first told that you just, first of all, just visit Shantipur and see the devotees there. He went there and there he saw Sita Rani. First, just I want to just describe to you the situation of Vishnupriya. I mean, she was so thin. She wasn't eating. The whole night she couldn't sleep. She was just chanting Chaitanya's name, Hare Krishna, the whole night. She wasn't sleeping. She would offer a very nice prasad to Lord Chaitanya, but she couldn't eat. She just see the prasad and just started crying in separation. So practically, her clothes were a little bit torn and just not very well kept. And she was simply absorbed. But she was just like effulgent from her devotion. And anyone who saw her was just melted. That was the condition. A similar condition was Sita Devi, the consort of Advaita. She couldn't bear the separation. What do we know of love of the Vaishnavas or love of the Lord? What separation do we know? These devotees were in such intense separation, you see. And but in spite of that separation, when they saw Srinivas, they became so enlivened that they were feeling little transcendental happiness just to see him. And the other people they're analyzing, that these devotees are practically, they can't even know how they're living. They're in such grief and separation from their lords. Yet, when they see Srinivas, how they're feeling transcendental joy, he must have Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his heart. Otherwise, how they can be feeling mitigation of their separation? And she told him, listen, that you are going to distribute so many transcendental literatures, you're going to preach the message of Lord Chaitanya, you're going to make so many devotees. This is you must stay on this world, you see, your whole life. You don't think about leaving any earlier. You know, because sometimes he would get very much in anxiety and want to, just, he couldn't bear to live. After those things, when he came one after another, and everyone just before he got there. Of course, Advaita and Nityananda had embraced him in when he was unconscious in a dream, and ordered him to, like that. So, still he was sometimes, you know, so frustrated when these things happen. He said, "You must stay, because you have a special mission." And then she had Achyutananda, Advaita's son, and other sons give mercy upon him. And he saw the place where Advaita, Nityananda, they all sat. Then he went down to Korda and he met Janavan, Vasudha. Everyone, he paid his obeisances and they gave a special mercy on him. Birbhadra Prabhu gave him mercy. Then they sent him, each one would send to the next devotee. Before you go to Vrindavan, you see this one devotee. And this way he would end up being sent Jagannath Puri to Navadip, Navadip to Santipur, Santipur to Kordaha. Then they send you go to Karnafuli, you see Abhiram Thakur. When he went to see Abhiram Thakur, Abhiram could see him, he said, "Let me test him." He offered some prasad to Jagannath, to Krishna, and he sent four devotees, and they first took the prasad. But then Srinivas, he was eagerly took their Mahaprasad, seeing that Abhiram Thakur was satisfied, just that he was a humble devotee. He would accept the Mahaprasad of Vaishnavas. He wasn't, you know, thinking, "Oh, this is already touched, this is, you know, like a smarta." So then, Abhiram Thakur was a bit unusual, special mercy of Nityananda. He used to, when he was very affectionate, he would give this special type of bijoy slap. And he would he would knock the prem into someone. He smacked him three times. And by giving him this slap, his wife came and said, "If you don't give him too much, because if he gets too ecstatic, how he'll preach? He won't be able to perform his, you know," because he was getting so ecstatic from these slaps. So then he ordered him that you have to go to Vrindavana. So then he just returned and he took permission from his mother, and there he met the devotees, Narahari Sarkar, Raghunandan, Chiranjeev, all those devotees of Srikandu, and they embraced him, and they couldn't bear the fact that he was leaving. He stayed for a few days. Although they're far senior, they were just, you see, even when he's a small boy, Narahari was much, he was a personal associate of Chaitanya. When he was a small boy, he took his hands, and he just took over his whole body and blessed him, that you become a great devotee of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you'll be blessed with pure love of Radha Krishna. So there was a long stay. This time he was very old, Narahari. We sing Kiva Narahari Adik. You can just see it was like one huge family. Just one huge family. You see. They're so closely connected, although they are different places. So finally he took permission and he went off to Vrindavan very eagerly to meet Rupa and Sanatan. Of course, we know when he reached Vrindavan, he saw huge crowds. He said, "What is this?" He said, "You don't know. To Rupa and Sanatan, they have gone back to the spiritual world." And then he heard that and he just felt, he just collapsed. He was just crushed. To who he would learn Bhagavatam from. All this time, this is just on his way to Vrindavan. And then he woke up and he was in the room of Gopal Bhatta Goswami, and he took initiation from him. And then he sent him to take special instruction from Jiva Goswami. So of course, Srinivas, when he went preaching, he would go with Narottam Das, who was a disciple of Lokanath. I just like to point this out. He went preaching with Shyamananda Pandit, who was the disciple of Hridayananda, Hridai Chaitanya, the disciple of Goridas Pandit, who was Subal in Krishna Lila, friend of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He would go with, of course, his disciples, Ramchandra Kaviraj, but he would go with other devotees of Bengal sometimes. They would preach You see, in Orissa, sometimes in Bengal, he would convert kings and make them devotees, and the whole kingdom would become Krishna conscious. But although there were different disciples of different spiritual masters, there was no such distinction. They worked together, one, Chaitanya's devotees. At that time, they had no kind of family spirit. Only we are now terms, you know, disciples, we can't work with Srinivas's group. Or we're, you know, of course we have the same thing in ISKCON. We don't have that spirit. But this spirit, I had a great argument with the Gaudiya. They're saying in Chaitanya's time there were so many devotees, they each preached their own way. Complete nonsense. They all work together. A disciple would develop faith, he would accept initiation. It took 3 years, two, 3 years of this menial service of Narottam Thakur. Finally, a spiritual master who had given a promise to Krishna, I don't want to take any disciples, I don't feel qualified. Finally, by such intense service of Narottam, one day called him in and said, you win. He would daily used to go and clean up his place where he would pass stool and put cow dung, make it clean. Even he said, I won't give you initiation. He said, that's all right, I just want to serve you. So like this, without any aspiration, you know, he simply served. So finally Lokanath gave in and gave him initiation. We don't find Lokanath's name, Lokanath Swami's name in the Chaitanya Charitamrita in so many places because he ordered Krishnadas Kaviraj, you dare don't put my name in your book. I don't want myself to be glorified anyway. You see, but in other literatures, they who didn't get that order, they didn't miss the chance to glorify the qualities of Lokanath. That's some other time we can say. So all these devotees, although they had different spiritual masters, they had developed faith in certain ways, they got their special mercy, they all sent out to preach together in different parts. And sometimes you see Shyamananda, he more or less concentrated on Orissa, but Narottam, he would go here and there preaching. He sent his devotee to Manipur, Gangadas, Narayan and others, and they were the ones who converted all those Manipuris to become pure Vaishnavas. They're all in the line of our Sampradaya coming from Narottam. But at that time, they all, in fact, they would sometimes, Janava Devi, she was in charge of the preaching. She blessed them all and they would preach in different ways. Sometimes with Birbhadra, sometimes separately. So you see, it was one truly transcendental family. Although they were different spiritual man, that wasn't at all a consideration. So it's very important to see that how Lord Chaitanya's movement was a preaching movement, how the greatest devotees who were actually Nitya Parshas from the spiritual sky, they came down and were preaching, distributing books. It is not at all anything but the most glorious activity. Some of them, yes, they stayed in Vrindavan and were writing books and they were in ecstatic mood, they were excavating the pastimes of Chaitanya and some of them were sent out and they had to preach. But they're all part of the transcendental Leela of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They're all His empowered devotees. Similarly today, those devotees, we can see how Prabhupada was empowered to spread this Krishna consciousness throughout the whole world. Similarly, He's empowering devotees, and in this way, devotees are being empowered through disciplic succession to preach. And this is all the expansion of Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. Adya piha lila kore gorarai kono kono bhagavan deke jare pai. Those who are fortunate, they can see the hand of Chaitanya, they can see Chaitanya Dhanan today performing their pastimes. You see. So we see that just as like Prithu Maharaj, when he was greeted by his citizens in this way, all the devotees, practically one of the main things is simply they meet devotees. Lord Chaitanya met his devotees came to meet him. In this way the pastimes are going on. Similarly, these pastimes are continuing. As devotees sometimes meet together and glorify the Lord and sometimes they part. And meet other devotees in this way. Ours is a great Sampradaya of reunion and separation. And what is the activity? Preaching. Samkirtan. That is definitely the conclusion of Narottam Thakur. So, Sri Krishna Sankirtanam Param Vijayate. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Is there any question? Pardon? Janava. The consort of Nityananda, after he left, she, for some time, actually took charge of expanding Sankirtan in Bengal. And there was a special, huge Sankirtan on the Padma River, Danur, where Narottam Thakur first started to chant in a free-flowing style the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya. That's called Padavali, where you tell a story of Chaitanya by singing. And the devotees, they would just be ecstatic. This was a very way of keeping everyone's attention to preach by singing like and talking mixed. Of course, this had been previously done by Basu Ghosh. So we find some reference that Basuda then came there and blessed the devotees. Iswari, she's of course Revati, as well as Aranga Manjari mixed. But she's special, also engaged in this preaching activity. So for some time, a female form was in the charge of the preaching. When Nityananda was present, you see, in his presence, she was very humble. She wouldn't. As soon as he'd leave, she'd immediately start preaching. He'd come back and she'd take the, you know, wife position. When he absolutely left, he said, now you see that the preaching goes on in her own way. I don't have so much details on it at this point. I'm researching. But definitely its effect. Yes? I never said that. I said that it is present in our movement. You see, I had a little argument with some of the Gaudiya mission. Prabhupada told me in Vrindavan in November 77 that I should try to unite, also not only me but others too, this Gaudiya Sampradaya. So I got into a little argument with one of the sannyasis from one of the Gaudiya mutts. I said, listen, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he wanted you to manage by governing body commission. Our society, we have a governing body commission. They said, you know, we said, well, everyone has to have their own guru. You know, it's not possible just to, you know, do it that way. I said, what do you mean? We have our governing body commission, 24 people. We have 11 gurus appointed by our spiritual master, and we're all cooperatively working. So where is the difficulty? You've all separated each to have your own separate place. How is this pleasing Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur? And then he retorted, he said, what do you mean? In the time of Lord Chaitanya, they each had their separate disciples and separate camps. I said, this is nonsense. You see, but I didn't have the direct references and quotes at that time, but I just knew intuitively that this couldn't be the fact. So then I studied a little bit, and it definitely, it's a fact. There was no such camp spirit or party spirit. They all worked together. How can the Mahabhagavata great devotees have, I mean, this is a vision that the Gaudiya Mutt has. They think that, you know, it's perfectly all right. Each they have their five temples and, you know, just look at the other people in some kind of competitive spirit, never get together, never have a joint program, all broken up. They have over throughout India about 100 temples. Maybe 64 were established by Bhakti Siddhanta. They made another 20, 30, maybe 80 temples they have. Maybe another 10, 15, 30 they made. But they don't at all work together, in no way. They can't look at each other hardly. You see, well, they look at each other, but I mean, they take prasad, but that's about it. You see, so I just wanted to point out that we see that how they disobeyed Bhakti Siddhanta, how they failed to work together, and therefore they're practically not able to do anything. And how it's always been in Chaitanya's movement that the preaching was always a transcendental reciprocation. Of course, in those days there wasn't a big one organization. It wasn't institutionalized. It was spontaneously, everyone was working together and preaching. And I indicated that in the ISKCON, we have that kind of mood. We have that cooperative spirit. I think you misunderstood me. But that it's not in the other missions. Maybe in each little mission they have, but they only appoint one acharya. You see, even more than one may appear to be qualified, but that's why then theirs break up because the other person wants to, or he's a little advanced, so he stays humble and he stays with him. But they don't work together in a broad way. So we're trying to bring them a little closer, carefully, because they have all these ideas we don't want to become affected, but we're trying to gradually change their ideas. So if ISKCON, you see, already the senior, there's only about 10 disciples of Bhaktisiddhanta left. There's very few godbrothers of Srila Prabhupada left. And they say that the whole future of the Lord Chaitanya's movement at this time is resting on ISKCON. What can the other people do? They're already practically broken. And they frankly say it. You see. They say the whole future at this time appears to be simply resting in the hands of ISKCON. And therefore they're talking about making one big... One camp wants to take over the birthplace of Chaitanya and have it run by a big conference. And they want ISKCON to be one of the members of that. At least they say that. Of course, anyway, I know some of the things Prabhupada would say if he was present. But we cannot say those things. So yes, ISKCON, as they continue to work cooperatively, as we continue to preach, automatically, you see, all these people are keeping their little party spirits. They have to accept that we are not able to, you see, work together. This is our defect. And thus in different ways we'll be able to bring them closer together in a more cooperative spirit. This is my hope that this is the way that it can be done. Prabhupada said the best way is you just bring them on your Sankirtan parties, preach together. And already, before I left, 3-4 devotees were sent by the president just to show you some of the difficulties. The acharya of the, after Bhaktisiddhanta left, there was that whole tussle, and Tirtha Maharaj, he took over. Now after he disappeared, you see, his disciples have split in two groups. One say it should be run by the disciples according without any sectarian feeling. But there's another camp says no, Bhakti, the Tirtha's brother, and a special like hereditary line, taking the property as a family property should be run. And he's got a few sannyasis on his side because you tell him, you come on my side and I'll make you acharya. So they've appointed one very nice devotee called Shaman Maharaj as the acharya. He's the godbrother of Srila Prabhupada. But then, you know, what happened is he made about 500 or a couple hundred disciples. And these disciples started to take, you know, positions, temple commander, temple treasurer. One of them became a temple president. Suddenly the disciples of Bhaktivilas Tirtha, they started to flash it. Well, they're moving up. I mean, after Shaman Maharaj is also very old, he's about 85. When he disappears, they're going to have another problem. Then his disciples, so immediately they made him sign a declaration, I will never keep any position, you know, although he's the acharya now. It's like a figurehead. My disciples won't take any permission, any position, or no make any claim on the future properties. And this way, it's so filled, the disciples, they became so disgusted, they're insulting our spiritual master. In this way, he told them that I don't want to leave I'm already 85 years old. I'm here. I'm just preserving the last remnants of Bhaktisiddhanta's presence. You know, although there's so many difficult things here, you can go wherever you find. You see pure devotional service. I don't mind. If you like to stay here, if you with me, or if you want to go out, you find it too difficult. So they're gradually, one by one, they're coming over to us, saying that we see how you work together. There's no party spirit. There's no difficulty. This way, our Guru Maharaj is being offended. We can't take all the politics. Can you please engage us in service? Then I ship them off to different parts of India, and they are serving. Very nice devotees, some of them. And someone, because I happened to just go there. He invited me over, and one time I was discussing preaching in Bangladesh, and he blessed me, said that I pray that, you know, your preaching in Bangladesh will be very successful. It's such a difficult area, all the Mohammedans and this and that. And so I was a little bit starting to yell at some of the other people, though, that why you're not giving us permission to build a kirtan hall at the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya, as Prabhupada, our Guru Maharaj, has ordered us to do in Vrindavan, his last order. He wanted us to build this kirtan hall, and you're refusing to give us permission with all kind of excuses. Maybe I'll do a public movement and do a mass petition, because, you know, people are advising me that way. Of course, I don't want to do that. I would never do such a thing, but they're telling me do a mass movement with public petitions why the Lord Chaitanya shouldn't have any kirtan hall, people standing in the hot sun and the rain. So I was a little bit, you know, getting on their case. And then when they started to realize, you know, that ISKCON has got a different position in Lord Chaitanya's movement there compared to the difficulty, the gurus being offended, so then they started to come over. So, you see, when you get off the track, I mean, I can go on telling you stories, why give you headaches and